Hello and welcome to this week's TES News Podcast. I'm Dave Speck and joining me is the TES team. We've got reporter John Roberts. Hiya, John.
Hello there.
We've got Deputy News Editor Mary Louise Clues. Hi, Mary Louise.
Hi.
We've got Catherine Luff. Hi, Catherine. How are you doing?
Hello, hi.
Now, coming up, why the government has thrown teachers under a bus under its decision to end face masks, and the pupils trading exam papers online for a quid. But first, breaking news this lunchtime is a venomous letter from 24 MAT leaders to exam regulator Ofqual. And they're demanding answers over the handling of this summer's exams, especially in the way that decisions were made so late. John, what are the main concerns of these 24 MATs, can I ask?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So, yeah, this is a letter that's gone into Ofqual to the chief regulator, interim chief regulator today. There's three key bits that I think we've pulled out. The first is that they're basically wanting Ofqual to set out exactly what planning was done for the eventuality that exams might have been cancelled this summer. Because as we know, the government was adamant that that wasn't going to happen, but the prospect of it happening was a live and real and escalating threat throughout the start of the academic year through to Christmas. It was kind of both like inevitable and a shock when Boris Johnson announced it, because the government had been so adamant that they'd go ahead. But what these MAT leaders have written to Ofqual has said, we all saw this coming. Why wasn't there a plan B in place? Why, after that announcement from Boris Johnson, were our students left in the dark for 3 months?
And teachers, of course, left in the dark.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've talked as well about the problems that creates for them now. So the other big concern they've got is the way in which Ofqual is expecting schools to provide evidence to support the grades that teachers are producing. And they've said that the way that this is done and the way that they're demanding it from everyone at 48 hours notice, they say, demonstrates that Ofqual just doesn't trust the sector. And that effectively, they said that basically Ofqual ought to have the intelligence to know whether exam centres are trustworthy, whether they are producing anomalous results that look problematic, and should be able to respond in that way. They shouldn't presume that everyone needs to be double checked. And I think there's two things driving that. One is obviously this very strong idea that they think that Ofqual is demonstrating that they don't trust the sector. But also, I suppose it's the fact that they've been expected to do this huge amount of work at a tight turnaround in the knowledge that it probably won't even be looked at.
Yeah, I know that line in the letter, John. There's that line in the letter, isn't there? If there is a real value in schools submitting reams of documents so they can sit there and read, then we urge Ofqual to explain it clearly.
Exactly. I mean, you can all feel the anger coming off the page, can't you?
You can.
I think, and then the other thing to mention, I suppose, is that, well, there's two other bits to mention. They also, as we are all doing now, cast their eye towards 2022 and urge Ofqual to produce plans as a matter of urgency. Again, their argument is that, we know the learning disruption that this generation has faced, so we know things need to be taken into account. And they're basically saying that Ofqual need a plan that basically takes into account the differential in learning disruption that the GCSE cohort will have faced by the time they get to next summer.
I know what you're going to come on to now, possibly. It's this idea that they're not going to pay exam boards unless the invoices are itemised, right?
Yes, exactly. So we thought that was such a striking thing. We've kind of pulled that out as a separate story for the website today. It's been a big debate about, schools pay all this money to exam boards, and yet essentially the kind of key function of the exam board in schools' minds is happening inside schools. They're doing the work, they're arriving at the grades. So how much money are we getting back? The interesting line, as you say, is that these 24 MATs, and there's some big ones in there, have basically said that they've instructed their finance officers to only pay invoices if it's itemized and they can see effectively that they've got what they're paying for, because they don't want to pay for things that they feel like their own staff are doing. I think it's kind of a putting a marker down, I think, over what is probably going to be a bit of a battle between now and the summer.
Well, indeed, because I'll bring you two in a minute, Mary Louise and Catherine, but we've got this other story up on our website that the exam boards are accusing head teachers of misunderstanding their workload and their costs and everything else that they're doing, aside from exam papers and marking. And the AQA has put out this statement sort of saying that, we're not just doing that. We're supporting schools through the process. We're carrying out a complex and completely new quality assurance, which has included developing and delivering training for all staff and examiners. And then you've got Ofqual coming out of, and they've said that, you know, in just a few months, exam boards have designed and implemented a new assessment system, which, and this work would normally take years. So, I mean, the exam boards have come out fighting here. They really are sort of, you know, they really want to highlight what all the stuff they're doing. Looks like they wouldn't have a problem in providing an itemized invoice.
Well, it sounds like, well, Catherine, you speak to exam boards on quite a regular basis, don't you? And do you think they've got a point around this all this extra work that they're doing this year?
When I've had conversations with people in the exam sector, that's sort of what they're saying. That, you know, although it is obviously a very different situation this year, then they've had to sort of create, I suppose, a whole new assessment system kind of off the bat. And so I think yeah, they do have a point, but then equally you can see from teachers' perspective that their workload has just kind of, you know, doubled or tripled, and you can see sort of teachers online talking about the amount of kind of, you know, double marking they're having to do of assessments and getting all this evidence ready to submit to boards. So I think yeah, they do have a point. It is reasonable to say that, but it's also, I think, particularly schools and teachers, the burden has fallen on them. And I think, you know, that's very clear in this letter that's how these academy trusts are feeling at the moment.
I think the other quick thing I'd say is that I think the other thing, and we've said this before, but it just makes you wonder if exams have been cancelled in October and this process had been elongated and people had more time to kind of decide exactly how to do it, explain to teachers exactly what was going to be needed. I think a lot of the anger and heat just comes out of the fact that it's basically, as they say, this bombshell announcement in January, then a vacuum, and now what feels from the outside and from the people we speak to like a mad scramble of intense workload in a kind of an uncertain environment. And I feel like that's what underpins all of this, really, is, you know, this all could have been planned for better.
And as well, the exam fees, when you look at the size of that, it's something like, you know, 260 million that schools are paying. You know, schools and colleges are paying in GCSE A levels and AS level exam fees, and you know, to still be paying all that is it seems so wrong. I know that there's a rebate is expected, and last year it was something like a quarter was paid back. This year, you know, schools are asking for more because they say they're doing more. That I think Jeff Barton of Askill said that they were doing the heavy lifting this year. But yet the exam boards have turned around and said, well, any more than, you know, 50%, for example, is not going to happen, is unrealistic. That's what Pearson have said. So that's, you know, another row to watch out for. That's going to be another battle being fought. And one head teacher said to me this week that it's not a battle they should be fighting on top of everything else. Just, you know, it's this kind of whole pandemic story is just evolving again in a different route now, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And just in terms of the overall process, another thing that was said in that letter, I think John was Matt Leaders was saying, in terms of what's going to happen next year, we need information now, we need decisions now. It does feel, I do feel like I'm in a bit of a 12-month Groundhog Day here where, you know, the noise is starting to come out from Ofqual, which you can, I think you did a story on today, Catherine, around, oh, yes, it's still plan A for exams to go ahead. And, oh, yes, we're going to have exams. This is exactly what was being said this time last year and right up until the bombshell announcement from Boris in January saying they'd been cancelled, wasn't it?
Yeah, I totally agree, actually. I think... you know, it is that sense of sort of, you know, you can totally understand why exams are the plan A. But you're absolutely right. They were this year too, until January. And I think, you know, we're not that far away from the start of the next academic year. And I don't think head teachers, I mean, Ian Backham said today, you know, there will be a plan B. We are going to look at sort of the learning loss across the cohort. But teachers and schools currently have no idea what that plan B might look like. And I think that's the point the letter makes today, is that really, if you're going to have a good contingency plan, it needs to be sort of with some forward planning from now, really, rather than, you know, sort of sticking to this line of, oh, exams are definitely going to happen, without knowing what might happen alternatively.
They said there was a plan B last time, didn't they, for this year? I don't think we ever heard any details on that.
The thing that strikes me as well, that one thing I feel, I wouldn't say sympathetic to Ofcom, but I do think that part of the problem is, and education has been suffered because of this, is that there's a kind of an environment where we can't bear to prepare for COVID to get worse. All of the forward planning that they do is to project things are getting better. We're going to unlock in this way. We're going to do this. No one wants to say, well, actually, we know it could get worse. And so we've got this kind of plan for, and I think that's why we go to this kind of cycle where we kind of cling to normality for as long as we can till we hit crisis point, then we go into lockdown, and then it's kind of like, oh, here's how we're going to get better and better and better. And I think obviously the whole country is so desperate to get back to normal that people kind of want to hear that. And I feel like education's really suffered from that, no one has proactively said things could go really bad here and this is what we've got in place, because they've just wanted to kind of put away this idea that if you look at any point in time over the COVID crisis, the kind of the narrative is that we're broken the back of it and we're moving towards normality. And that hasn't been the case at any stage. And now we're saying it is again. And God, fingers crossed, I hope it is. But I feel like that's the problem. There is no political appetite to prepare for bad times.
Reminds me of a song that was once used as a kind of victory song for a Labour Prime Minister winning the election, but that's showing my age.
It reminds me of the houses in Australia. When I lived in Australia, right, the houses are only designed for summer. There's kind of no central heating and it's sort of all open plan. Anyway, I digress. But now, talking of Ian Balcombe, I know we just mentioned him, and he was on Radio 4 this morning on the Today programme. And they talked about your exclusive from last week, Catherine, didn't they? And they put it to him again whether schools should not test and do more testing in their efforts to gather evidence ahead of awarding grades. And did he shed any more light on that, Catherine?
No, he didn't really come back on that point, but he was asked about it. And essentially it's that kind of paradox, I suppose, between sort of saying that all these grades must be fully evidenced, and that if you don't have evidence for students, then absolutely that's what schools need to be doing, and kind of preparing a portfolio to, you know, obviously send off to the boards as samples, and then at the same time saying, well, you've got kind of all this extra time before June 18th and it shouldn't all be testing and it should all be teaching. I understand the sentiment, because obviously, you know, for students, they've missed out on learning time, and, you know, they should also obviously have proper lessons. But it's, again, I think just didn't go down with the sector very well, because I think it's kind of, again, the boards perhaps not understanding the position that schools are in, and, you know, that this is not necessarily, you know, a choice that teachers are perhaps, you know, doing a lot of mock exams at the moment. This is kind of following the guidelines of what they've been told to do. So I think it didn't go down that well, but he didn't particularly respond. He just said, you know,
you mean he ducked the question.
I guess so. So
he's very polite, Catherine.
He said that, you know, we're not having exams this year because of the unfairness of the pandemic, and then he spoke about, you know, the fact that schools need to build up evidence, but that evidence is going to vary from school to school. But I think, you know, it is a reasonable point that teachers have made, and we've had sort of some opinion pieces on the site about this as well from head teachers, where they've said, well, we've been asked to ensure that there's evidence for our students, and then at the same time we're being told not to test all the time, and I think, you know, those are quite kind of conflicting pieces of advice.
Mm-hmm. And one said, you know, how we've been told you can't grade on a trajectory, where you think students might get to. You have to have the evidence to show. So if the student's currently sitting at grade B's and they've got an offer for grade A's, how are you going, and they would have put the work in to push their grades up in exams, how can you kind of give them that opportunity without testing them, you know, at this stage? So, you know, I wouldn't like to be in the teacher's shoes right now.
It feels as well there's like almost an inherent contradiction in all that, because on the one hand, you want the, you know, we would expect the grades that they arrive at to be as generous as last year and therefore above 2018-19, etc. And yet it's almost implausible that they could evidence being at a higher level this year than they would have been 2 years ago had they had a full education. Do you know what I mean? So it's, I feel like teachers are in a really invidious position whereby they have to be seen to be fair to their pupils, but also provide evidence that backs it up in a year where that's going to be in short supply. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Just briefly, Catherine, just tell us about these exam papers that have been sold for a quid on TikTok. Is there any gains to be had by pupils, or is it a scam, do you think?
I think it is a bit of a scam. So, I mean, exam boards have said it's unacceptable for students to trade or try to buy or sell papers. But their justification for that is actually not that it's an example of malpractice, but that it's you know, it would be breaking copyright.
Right.
But I'm not entirely sure that there is a, you know, a real advantage for students, because the papers that they're trading, I mean, some are from the 2020 summer series, which was obviously cancelled, and then those papers were sat in the autumn. But the exam boards did put up all their kind of assessment materials that students might be marked on quite publicly. So I don't think there is necessarily an advantage, other than, you know, obviously that students can use these to kind of study and revise from, but I don't think anyone in the system objects to that. I think it's, you know, that's by design, and it's understood that these are not proper exams, and, you know, these are not necessarily going to be unseen papers for students. I think it's more comes down to the point, I suppose, that, you know, if they are on a secure site, then it's a copyright issue, and they shouldn't be being traded, and certainly, you know, shouldn't be being sold.
But otherwise, if it's not a copyright, it's at least money for old rope, as they would say in Yorkshire.
I think so. Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
But listen, let's move on, because another big event on Monday of next week is that masks in secondary schools are going to come off finally. Well, in some schools at least. But we've been speaking to teachers who were quite against that stance. And, you know, one head teacher who's on video on our website, he said, why couldn't the government have just waited another 2 weeks until after half term, when there's going to be fewer students in schools, presumably because year 11 and year 13 will have gone. But Mary Louise, this is a story you're fairly familiar with, aren't you? What was head teacher Vic Goddard saying to us? What's he been telling us?
Well, he was making the point of saying he just doesn't understand why the requirement for masks in secondary schools has been lifted 2 weeks before half term, when all of year 11 and year 13 will be leaving school and won't be coming back. And so when after half term, and we'll have much reduced school population, so they'll be able to kind of put in social distancing, it'll be much easier kind of environment for them to deal without having masks in the school. And it just says, and also the other point he was making was, you know, it just feels like there's been a complete lack of understanding and empathy of the kind of pressure that schools are under. And essentially they're pushing teachers under a bus on this issue because the national kind of requirement has been so sort of, it was announced by the Prime Minister in a briefing. It's such a big announcement. Kind of head teachers that still feel that masks are required are just in a position of having to kind of be in conflict with their school communities now, because
possibly,
it's down to them potentially.
Yeah, because Vic's quote is, he says head teachers are being thrown under a bus by the Prime Minister. He said it's because this relaxed guidance is being foisted upon them without proper explanation behind it.
Yeah.
So how can they explain that if they want to keep masks? How can they explain that to parents and the communities? Or if they don't want to keep masks, how can they explain that to parents and communities?
It's this idea, in a way, that schools can be, because it's such a divisive issue, I guess, that schools could be getting it in both directions. You can well imagine having parents who would object to it, and also to a mask being insisted upon, but equally the other way as well. And it's another example, I think, of a kind of a government pronouncement kind of playing out at ground level, and school leaders having to kind of, and teachers and staff having to deal with the consequences. Yeah.
It feels like, it does feel, because, you know, the unions and scientists did a joint letter a couple of weeks ago, didn't they, to DfE saying it's not the right time. We think masks should be kept in schools. It does feel like a sort of eye-catching announcement meant for an audience outside 100%. Of the centre.
It's exactly, yeah. Sorry, I'm just going to rant again slightly, but it's exactly the same thing. It's a great good news story. Do you know what I mean? They have the Prime Minister saying it, not exactly. It's
not Gavin Williamson.
Yeah, they didn't get Gavin Williamson up to, who I've not seen for a while. To say it. They've got Boris up saying, you know, masks are coming off, everything's going in the right direction. But the truth of the matter, as we know, in some parts of the country, it isn't going in the right direction already. So it does.
Which parts?
The timing
that's
of it,
worth mentioning, isn't it? Which parts are, is it the northwest where
parts of Greater Manchester? Yeah, in Bolton and Bury in particular, there are schools. The public health officials in those councils have written to schools to say that they should keep restrictions in place from Monday because they have seen a surge in these in infections from the so-called Indian variant of COVID. And it's also the same thing has been seen in Bedford as well. So the council in Bedford and public health officials there are saying to schools, they should continue wearing masks, they should keep all the social distancing and the bubbles in place. I think I've heard one official from, or one director from Bedford Council saying that she certainly doesn't want to see anyone hugging in Bedford from Monday. So it's not just, obviously not just schools, but they're really worried about these new spikes. Again, it feels a bit like, and I hope I'm wrong, and sort of going to your point about the kind of the things can only get better drumbeat from government, but it does feel a bit like sort of a whole 12-month Groundhog Day going on here, in terms of kind of sort of cases going up in certain areas, but the overall narrative is we're unlocking, we're removing restrictions.
I guess as I've brought a whole dose of COVID gloom to this, I suppose the things I should, I suppose the big, because I was thinking the same, that it kind of reminds me, I was struck by something the Public Health England said, that this variant is as transmissible as the Kent one, which the government kind of said was the driving force for things kind of spiralling in December and is ending up in a new national lockdown. I suppose we are in the summer. COVID's very less prevalent. And fingers crossed, you know, the vaccination programme is continuing to go amazingly. So,
but does the vaccine work against the new variant?
That's what we'll find out, I guess, in the fullness of time. I suppose the other thing, and this comes back to the exam point as well, is how much more disruption will schools have to face as a result of unlocking, you know, either, if not before the summer, then in September and onwards. And I just feel like in a way you've got head teachers essentially having to implement public health choices of the government and it's just such an unenviable position for them.
Well, look, can we be more positive to end this? Because I know that we all know, right, there's going to be a lot of teachers on Monday who are thoroughly chuffed to not have to teach children wearing masks. And, I mean, Catherine, as a former English teacher, that's a subject where masks would be a real barrier, you would have thought. What would be your view? Would you be one of those that would be chuffed about seeing an end to masks?
I think on a kind of teaching basis, then yes, quite clearly. If you want, and I know you taught languages as well, and any subject that's kind of based on communication, discussion, masks will make that more difficult. I don't know whether as we've said, I think it just seems a strange time to lift that. So I think just in the circumstances we're in, I'm not sure if I were teaching that I would want them removed.
Okay.
You are right that on a kind of, in terms of just purely pedagogically, I think they must make it more difficult to sort of communicate with your class and have the sort of discussions you'd want to have.
I just got this horrible image of something the ASCL president said at their conference, of the the soggy masks that children are wearing that have been unwashed for, you know, for quite some time. And they're just coming out of the pockets and that all the bacteria germs must be on those. And he, I think he questioned whether Chris Whitty is, can he come out and tell us if they really work? You know, what, so I mean, anyway,
I think Mary Bastard said that NEU members are quite split on that issue. So there's obviously arguments on both sides on that.
Indeed. Well, should we wrap it up there for another week? Or has anyone got anything more?
Things can only get better.
Or worse.
Right, well, thanks for listening anyway. See you soon. Bye.
Cheers. Thanks, thank you. Bye.
Bye.